All right, good day, nerds, and thanks for joining us for episode 13 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by co-host Steve.
Hey.
Hey, we're going to hit this week's major news by covering some of the latest reviews and movies that Steve has seen over the weekend. We're going to discuss who's going to dethrone the Game of Thrones now that that's left a fantasy void in our TV world. Going to discuss a little bit of our own personal FOMO as Star Wars Galaxy Edge came out and neither one of us have made it there.
Womp womp.
And then have a big discussion around the Captain Marvel deleted scenes that were released last week. Stick around and enjoy the show.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, welcome back to episode 13 of the Nerd Cantina Show. To get started here, Steve, let's talk about your weekend and some of these movies you've seen, beginning with the latest review that you wrote, which was Godzilla.
Yeah, so I went and saw Godzilla opening night. Once again, it's one of those movies that I highly suggest you go see in the Dolby theater. The difference between Dolby and IMAX is almost not even there. You know, IMAX's screen is bigger, I will say that. It's a little clearer, but that Dolby Digital is still way better than a normal movie. So you do get an upgraded visual. But man, that sound system is just intense. You know, so you go see a movie like Godzilla, bro, it's just fucking... Yeah, yeah, it rattles your seat. You really get into a movie like Godzilla like that. You know, I say it in my review, and I'll say it again now. The reason why I started writing reviews is because I think if you go into a movie with the proper expectations, your experience will always be better off for it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One of my longtime sayings is expectation management is the key to happiness.
Yeah.
Because when your expectations are off, it doesn't matter whether you have a good experience or not. If you expected it to be better, you're salty as fuck.
Yeah. You know, so if I said in the review, if you go into Godzilla expecting a Sundance film, that's your fucking bad. Okay, it's not the makers of Godzilla's bad that you went in expecting this some cultural piece alongside with monsters and you didn't get it. Like,
I did see somebody, I can't remember who tweeted it, but I saw somebody tweet that there was like reviews saying that they wish there was more human drama involved in Godzilla. So, and the tweeter just retweeted and said, so I guess that means Godzilla is a success because that's what you want out of a Godzilla movie. Who the fuck is going into Godzilla yeah. really you trying know, to dive deep into the humans?
And the human storyline that pushed the narrative of it wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was, you know what I mean? It was like that. You go in with a good Godzilla movie because you like extra cheese.
And this you know what I'm saying? And this isn't just the Godzilla... You know, the Godzilla destroying the city by himself thing. This is Godzilla King of the Monsters. So it's all about Godzilla fighting the other monsters. How much humans do you really want tossed in there?
Yeah. You know, and there was a good portion of it, though. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, there was a storyline that took place. It pushed the narrative that you wanted to get to the end to. They acknowledge almost every previous Godzilla movie. You know, so I'm not a huge Godzilla fan. Like, this is only like the second or third Godzilla movie I've seen. You know, I don't watch the old ones with the Japanese dude in a suit and things like that. So there were some Easter eggs in there. There were scenes that were they cut to where I was like, oh, I bet a Godzilla fan knows what that is. And I'm just dumb as shit. You know, so like I would say that if you're a Godzilla fan, you're going to enjoy this way more than I did. And I still enjoyed it. I really did. You know, the CGI is at its pinnacle now. You know what I mean? You can't... We are blurring the lines of realism with current CGI.
Yeah, I don't really know how much better it's going to get. I'm sure it can, but it's got to be only like incrementally better from where it is
and
now.
How much can the human eye even tell? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, some fucking crazy animal might be able to tell the difference between 15K... in 8K,
maybe it'll just get easier to do because, like, the whole Game of Thrones explanation on why, like, John never pet Ghost before that last episode was because it would cost them too much money to actually build the CGI. Okay, so maybe it's still out of reach. Maybe that's where CGI improves. It just gets down to the low level of TV.
Yeah, to where people at their home have like this uber crazy CGI capability because it's so cheap now. There were so many monsters in the movie. It there was some really good action scenes, some really good fight scenes. The acting was good. You know, I could disagree with some of the choices they made with some characters, but again, it's a Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
You know, so don't go in expecting it to be fucking Tolkien.
Yeah. Is it a must see in the theater type or way better in the theater just because of the CGI aspect?
For sure. You want to see this on a big screen with the big speakers. You know, a home viewing will be good and enjoyable, but this is one of those kind of movies that you know, you want to be immersed in. You know, if you enjoyed movies like Pacific Rim, if you enjoy movies, you know, up that kind of genre, you're going to love this. You know, if you don't, then you don't. And I'm not going to fault you for it. You know, it's your own taste. But just because it's not your taste doesn't make it a bad movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not a horror fan. I'm not going to say every horror movie is a bad movie. That's just not my cup of tea. So I don't drink it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it was a good movie. It's worth a viewing in the theater, especially if you're a fan of that type of genre. So I urge our listeners and our readers to get out if you think this is one of those ones that you may enjoy.
Yeah, another movie that you saw this last week. Maybe you could tell us whether this one is something you need to see in the theaters, and that's Booksmart.
So that's a hard gauge to say about like a movie like Booksmart. You know, it's like a super bad type comedy. Senior year, we're about to graduate. You know, it's that typical, you've seen it a million times. Every generation has that movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's been done, but every generation is different, so it really hasn't been done. You know what I mean? Like, Can't Hardly Wait isn't the same as Superbad, isn't the same as Breakfast Club, isn't the same as, you know, they all have the same tone and the same theme. This one heavily plays on Generation Z. I borderline felt like maybe I don't know if I should be watching this movie. Like, I don't relate to anybody in this film, you know, like, but it was funny. It was still good, you know, because you do remember the feelings of being in high school and having those awkward moments. But the way the characters react to those moments and the way the main characters aren't what you remember in high school. You know, yeah. Like everybody in this movie would have got beat up at our high school. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't have four openly gay main characters when we went to school. Like, no. there was no one was openly gay back when we were in high school, you know? So it's hard to like picture yourself in that hallway in that sense. But it was good. It was good, you know, and is for a generation that does have openly gay kids, trans kids, you know, just a wide variety of motivation between, you know, what kids do nowadays. It was good. And it played on the same tones of being sexually awkward, of being socially awkward, of being lost in a world where you don't know your purpose yet. It played on a lot of those themes, which are pretty timeless. The writing was really good. It was really funny. I laughed out loud at a lot of it. There were a few scenes that didn't work and I thought drugged down the movie a little bit. That's why I didn't give it 5 stars. But for the most part, if you're looking for just a good, wholesome comedy with some smart writing, it wasn't just like, you know, American Pie's just all
dick and
sex jokes.
Yeah, it's all dick and pie.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It wasn't like over the top like that. The writing was really smart. The main female characters do a really good job of acting and portraying their characters. So yeah, if you're just looking to go to a movie and laugh because you did enjoy the Superbads and the Can't Hardly Waits, and you know, go see it. And I feel bad for the movie because it came out the same weekend as Aladdin. And Aladdin just killed it at the box office.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were just like, oh, this Booksmart must not be good. And it was like, no, it came out against a fucking Disney movie.
Yeah.
You know, and like everybody went and saw the Disney movie. I hope it stays in the theaters for a little longer and people actually go out and support it, because it is worth it. If you don't get to the theater and see it, definitely give it a watch, though, you know, when it comes on HBO or if it comes out on Blu-ray or digital. Definitely take a look at it, because it was very well written and the acting and the characters are original, and I enjoyed it a lot.
I mean, really, there's still some good movies out there, and it's you know, you're.
I know.
Your
I gotta
time
go
is
see,
limited. Rocket Man.
I gotta
looks
go see
great.
Rocket Man. Still, I, you know, like, yeah. There's what comes out this week. I think X-Men comes out this week.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm just scrambling to get to the theater enough to try to write these reviews, and I still have to finish writing a few of them and put them out there. Hopefully, they'll be out before this podcast release, so you guys could just go click on them.
All right, and then you know, talk about what movies are coming out, but here this week, a show that you're excited about and recently turned me on to is Handmaid's Tale.
Under His Eye.
And so, yeah, I just finished up, I think, episode 6 last night as I'm trying to get caught up. And it is a really, like, quickly catches you in, reels you in type show.
And I've been pushing this show because I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about what this is. So you see people dressed up as handmaids at abortion rallies and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people think this is like a politically driven and like really kind of like female drama. I think a lot of dudes don't think they can relate to this show at all. And yeah, that is not the case whatsoever. This is a show for everybody. It's really thought-provoking. Like,
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of it. I had no idea what the show was even about. I seriously had absolutely no idea what this... I didn't even know what time period this show was centered in. I actually thought this was like some older movie or something else.
People see The Handmaid's Tale and they think it's like some show from the 1800s or something like that. So they never give it a shot unless you know somebody who has watched it.
Yeah, and it is really good in like that 1984-esque, you know, dystopian society, super governmental control with a little bit of I have no idea why the biological aspect of this is happening yet. I'm sure it gets explained at episode 6. I don't know, so keep your mouth shut.
I'm not gonna, you know, not just for your spoilers but for our listeners. I'm still trying to get people to listen to watch the show,
but no, it is really good. Great acting in it, and really, like,
for sure,
interesting camera work to where, like, Some of it's weird to me, but a lot of it just really, like, captures, like, this the awkward way people are forced to live in the society now. So it's like the camera work seems awkward, but at the same point, like, that's what they're trying to capture. They're trying to capture these people can't be themselves. They can't exist in it. Like, it's really, really well done. I actually like it a lot.
And it has moments of that Game of Thrones brutality where, you know, like, It has Red Wedding moments. It has, you know what I mean, Ned Stark with the head off moments where you just like, what is going on? Like, you just, and I really hope, you know, season 3 releases on the 5th, which I think is Wednesday.
Yeah, the day this podcast comes out.
Yeah, so I really hope they dive more into the actual fall of society. They do, you know, I don't think it's really a spoiler, but throughout the two seasons, they do give flashbacks that kind of explain how they inched towards here, but it's still by season 3, it's still very vague, you know, so you kind of build up, it's really building up to how Gilead was formed and how, you know, medically the medical side of it drove everybody to this, you know, like, I'm trying to watch myself
Just
watch the fucking show.
Go watch the show.
I said it's a good show. It's on Hulu. Watch that shiz.
We talk about Handmaid's Tale because we got to have the next big show following Game of Thrones being done. And what's going to kind of take that spot? And me being a big kind of fantasy genre guy, I'm looking forward to, you know, it was released by my favorite author, Brandon Sanderson. He was putting it out that Wheel of Time has been now picked up by Amazon to be adapted. Wheel of Time being a spectacular 14-book series, which, unlike, you know, George R. R. Martin, was actually completed. The author died, and Brandon Sanderson picked it up and finished it. So, George R. R. Martin, get on your shit and actually finish those books.
Yeah, no shit. It doesn't help that he's like 300 pounds and gray beard. Like, you just look at this dude, and you're just like, you were going to die, man. Die. Like, yes. Help me out.
Somebody's. Like, yeah, I hope you at least have a good outline written so somebody
can
pick it up.
Put the butter down and pick up a pen, you motherfucker.
Wheel of Time series, if you haven't read it, I mean, one, it's dense. Like, I mean, it's 14 books, and they're not small books either. But Robert Jordan crafted an awesome story and world that this all exists in. Robert Jordan writes the first 11 books 12, 13, and 14 were picked up by Brandon Sanderson,
which he did leave an outline for Sanderson, yes, too, did, right? Yeah. That from what I know about it, he left an outline for Sanderson, and Sanderson worked with his wife very, very extensively to keep the tone and finish it the way he wanted to. And from what I've read of like opinions on it, I've never read Wheel of Time, so I can't really speak on the story, but from all the critics' standpoints, I was told Sanderson did a really good job of finishing that off for him. You know, we both love Brandon Sanderson, so we're a little biased, but from other people's opinions that I've read, I heard he did a really good job of ending that.
Yeah, and I also haven't made it that deep into the series, so I need to get caught back up. Natalie's read all 14 solely to get to Brandon Sanderson's point, because once he picked up the series, she went and crushed through all of the books in order to get to where he's picked it up. And she said, yeah, it's seamless. He does a great job stylistically. He kept it really in line with the way Robert Jordan was telling the story and wanted to tell a story, which is kind of a really great way to in memoriam finish out somebody's life's work.
You know, mini promo for Brandon Sanderson. If you guys aren't reading Sanderson's work, you should really get on that shit, because he has, you know, a dozen novels, right? At least.
Yeah, well,
you know, and between the Cosmere and his other Steelheart.
Yeah, between Steelheart, you've got the Mistborn trilogy, The Way of Kings. You've got Elantris. Well,
Mistborn follows into the Cosmere universe.
So they actually all tie into his
Cosmere. I don't think Steelheart
is.
Yeah,
you're right. I think Steelheart's outside of it.
Yeah.
But Way of Kings is phenomenal. All these books are phenomenal, and they all have extremely detailed, well-crafted ways of the mystical physics. Kind of every one of them is drastically different in how that fantasy plays into the world, and he does such a spectacular job of painting a new world and a new way people interact within that world and through the mystical side of it. I love his writing, and it's
dense. If you're listening to this podcast, we assume that you're probably driving your car and you got a half hour ride for, you know, and you're listening to us in the car. If you're not a big reader, the audiobooks, Mistborn's audiobook was phenomenal. Yeah, the way the reader portrayed all the characters, the voice acting, it was phenomenal. So just because it's a novel, don't be discouraged to seek it out. I really highly recommend reading Mistborn or listening to Mistborn on audiobook. You could sign up for Audible. I think you get one free book a month if you sign up for Audible.
You get one credit a month, yeah, but for $15, and which is a good deal, because like Brandon Sanderson's are some of the best bang for your bucks you're going to get on Audible, because his audiobooks are like 30 something hours long. His books are well written and dense. So for $14, you get an audiobook that's cost about $50 to buy it independently because of how long and the quality of audiobooks. So it is great. And I think hopefully Amazon takes the Wheel of Time. I know they've already announced that they're going to differ from the 14 book arc, but there's still plenty of like source material.
Sanderson even said that in the article. Yeah. He's like they are taking it in different directions. He says he was wary about one or two of the things they're changing, but for the most part, everything that they're gonna change is he sees why, and he totally agrees with why they're doing it. I think a lot of it has to do with them telling the story out of order.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that plays into it, me not having read any of it. That they did say that they're going to restructure some of the story, and for the most part, Sanderson's all about it, you know. So I trust the dude. I'll defer to him, you know. I think he'll be great.
I'm excited to give it a try, and hopefully it turns out. And then we got a bunch of other ones that are kind of coming out here that have been picked up or in some stage of development.
HBO churned out that Chernobyl right after Game of Thrones ended, but it was a 6-part miniseries, and it's done. It's telling the events of a factual story. So I don't think they anticipated how successful Chernobyl was going to be. And they're just like,
I think they did. Like, it's just how far are you going to go into the story of Chernobyl? Yeah, I mean, six part miniseries, well done, is probably all you get.
They got people to extend their subscription to HBO at least another month.
Yeah.
You know, so they're biding their time. They're biding their time.
But But in the fantasy realm, we know that Amazon Prime also has another Lord of the Rings series that they're adapting. We actually don't even know a name of it or what the point is, but we know we're getting a Tolkien inspired series on Amazon.
Well, the movies cut out a lot of Tolkien's work. You know, There was Tom Bombadil was cut out of the movie entirely. They don't touch on the Silmarillion very much. There's a lot of elf folklore that they could go into. So, I mean, if you look at the trilogy of movies, they're all like 3 hours long. So you're talking, just if you broke the movies into hour-long episodes, you have a season of that.
Well, and supposedly Amazon is spending a lot of money on the series. Like, one that Amazon is going heavy into. You know, it's already comes with a strong fan base. It already has enough cannon to hit the ground running pretty well. And then if they're putting the right effort into it, it might turn out really good. So you got that one. You've got HBO and his Dark Materials. So the Golden Compass fantasy.
Yeah, I watched that trailer. That looks interesting.
Yeah, the Golden Compass, the movie, the first movie was good. And I don't know if you remember when that movie came out. So the books are good. When the movie came out, it really got kind of roasted. It was actually a pretty good movie. It still was an entertaining movie to watch, but it got really roasted. A lot of it was tied to kind of the religious undertones of this weird, like, you know, the animal souls and stuff like that. And it got people just didn't receive that well at all. And it killed the project because it was supposed to be the trilogy. They were supposed to do all the books, and they never went back and revisited it in the movie. So I'm glad it's going to get a new life in HBO, and the trailer looks good. The stories are good, so hopefully.
And a lot of stuff has to do with timing. Sometimes society just isn't ready for certain topics, certain tones, certain things. You know, movies that came out and bombed before find new life a decade later with a different audience and a different mindset. So I attribute to that. And that might have been the case, is just that, you know, people weren't ready for that kind of topic, you know, and it being a movie, you have to condense things in a way that you don't have to condense them in a TV show. So they might be able to explain that what people got put off on in the movie, they might be able to tell it in a different way that doesn't trigger certain emotions for them in a TV show.
I love TV way more than movies. I love the longer form of getting to a story. So good, well done TV shows, I think, are always.
Oh, yeah, I want all the details. I want all the crumbs. Yeah. Give me, I can have.
I want a slow build into characters. I don't want to make leaps into who these characters are in 15 minutes because we got to get to the story. No, I'll take 3 episodes to figure out who somebody is.
Well, and so many movies leave it on the audience to fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
I hate that shit. Like, I don't want to write my own part of the script. Like, if I wanted to write a script, I'd make my own fucking movie. You know, like, give me, I want the true vision of the creator. And I don't want to have to throw my imagination, my 2 cents into to fill in the gaps that got us to the end. Like, I want to know your true vision. Give me, you know, just because it's not for me doesn't mean it's bad. You know, the opinions are like assholes, you know, just because I didn't receive it doesn't mean that your vision is bad. And like, I try not to be offensive in my reviews too much and things like that. But yeah, I want to know what was in your head. That's kind of like my journey. I don't want to be a part of that journey. I want to be on the ride for that journey.
But that's the limitation of film, of the movie industry. You know, that's why there's always the argument on, you know, the books are always better than the movie. Well, sure, they should be.
Because they spent 5 fucking pages describing what this bridge looks like. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
the books should always be better. There's just so much more detail, so much more character building, so much more, like, you get so much more invested into it that it's
like asking somebody, hey, what'd you do this week? Tell me in 3 minutes. You know, oh shit, okay, well I did this, I did that, like, that's what movies are, you know what I mean?
Like, and as the production value of TV continues to improve, the medium of television is so such a better place for storytelling. Many people have said
we're in the golden age of television right now. Like this is just phenomenal. The writing and the production that is on television at people's command is just it's phenomenal.
There's still a bunch more. We haven't even talked about Netflix has picked up the Chronicles of Narnia. You know, which the movies were okay beforehand, and the story of Chronicles. The story of Chronicles of Narnia, I'm not a huge fan of.
C.S. Lewis was just like a Tolkien hater and was just trying to really, like, they had that huge rivalry, and he has a lot of Christian undertones.
So he was a Christian writer. In that story. And Chronicles of Narnia is a Christian, it's a weird retelling of Christian beliefs. And I never got too into it. I know, you know, that seven book
series. You can tell the movies try to avoid that almost as much as possible.
Yeah. We'll see with the TV show. I don't know, you know, Netflix has picked it up, and I don't know. We'll see if it gets good reviews. Maybe I'll join it, but I won't be too enthused for a new adaptation. Well,
we talked about that last week. Netflix really needs to hone in on the quality if they want people to keep paying them $14 subscriptions.
Well, yeah, and Netflix has a spot at E3, which is coming with some conflict, right? Because it's like, this is a video game space. Get the fuck out of our house for Netflix. And it's really said that Netflix is doing it because they booked space at E3 because they're releasing a whole bunch of shows centered around video games. So they've picked up The Witcher.
The Witcher.
So they have The Witcher show coming out. They also have, they've picked up an animated series that's being directed by the Russo brothers for Magic: The Gathering. So the Russo brothers are heading up an animated series centered around the lore of Magic: The Gathering, and then there's probably going to be a couple more announcements coming out of.
Yeah, they're not going to release everything before E3. What the fuck's the point of doing E3? A release. Yeah.
So you know, then so maybe they're going to reach into, who knows, the Assassin's Creed or whatever else that have interesting stories, well-built stories in the video game realm. And I think that that's the whole point of them going to E3.
What I think really Game of Thrones did, besides bringing really high quality entertainment to television, was let producers and studios know the capabilities of the reach of a show like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to, if you put together high quality production with a very high quality story, you can captivate hundreds of millions of people. Like, not just like, we're not talking, you know, some primetime, you know, ABC TV show numbers here. We're talking Super Bowl fucking numbers.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think producers and studios are starting to realize that, you know, if they just try to churn out the next rom-com, that they're really kind of doing themselves a disservice. Yeah. Real quick, while we're on the talk of Netflix, I did want to mention a movie I watched this weekend that was on Netflix that I think people should watch, is that Always Be Your Maybe. That's on Netflix. Since we're on the topic of Netflix, even though it's a little off topic, I wanted to say it was on top of my head.
Also, because we're on the topic of rom-coms. Is that a rom-com? It sounds like a rom-com.
Yeah. It's a rom-com. It's okay. A rom-com. Yeah, it's definitely a rom-com, an Asian rom-com. But it's got I can't remember her name. I think her last name's Tran, a really funny Asian comedian, and the dude that's on Fresh Off the Boat, the dad from Fresh Off the Boat. So it's got really two really funny Asian comedians that head up the film, and it's new to Netflix. It just came out, I think, last week, and I watched it Saturday night, and I really enjoyed it. I'm probably gonna write a review on it just because I don't do too many Netflix movie reviews, but I definitely think everyone should watch that. So
okay.
I wanted to put that out there before I forgot.
Never heard of it, never saw it. So,
and that's why
that's
I said
why you
shit.
Write the review. let us know about your favorite rom com. hopefully somebody unseats again. I do look forward to the next major cultural show that gets picked up. I hope it falls in more of like a fantasy realm. I think fantasy has a big mass appeal. You know, I'm a big sci-fi fantasy guy. Sci-fi, I don't think is ever going to pick up a show that's just going to everybody's going to watch. You know, because it doesn't
throw
have
outer
mass
space
appeal.
In. Like, it just turns some people off.
Battlestar Galactica is never going to
Man, don't knock that remake. But that Battlestar remake, I love. That show was great.
I loved the show.
Don't you dare say a bad word about that.
No, so I'm saying I love it.
I'll frack your face up, pal.
my gaming tag is still fracking noob on Xbox. Like,
for all those that just heard that, spam the shit out of his messages on Xbox now.
Come get it. I'll check it in about 6 months when I turn on my Xbox. Just sci-fi doesn't have that mass appeal. It's harder for people to make that leap. But for whatever reason, people make their leap to elves and gnomes pretty easy.
I know. It's really weird that you throw in some science and people get turned off. But you throw in fake magic and everyone's like, huh?
Dragons?
Dragons?
Right. Unicorns. Let's get some unicorns in there. I'm hoping for one of these fantasy shows to kind of pick up. As a personal fan, Wheel of Time would be great, but as long as something's done very well, and
Amazon just released that Neil Gaiman show that everybody in the Facebook group was talking about, that Good Omens.
It looks really good.
I'm on episode five of it now. It does have that dry British humor, you know. it's funny, but not like laugh out loud funny. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's like the way I describe British humor is like, it's funny. You just ain't gonna laugh.
Yeah.
Like you're gonna, in your head, you're gonna go, huh? Like, oh yeah. You know, but you're never just gonna out loud like laugh at it. But it is, you know, I'm a huge Neil Gaiman fan. Neil Gaiman is a phenomenal writer. It's a good show. It really is. So that's another fantasy kind of genre. You know, it's angels and demons.
It's on my list to get to. I just got to get through Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, but you pound that shit out, motherfucker, because we're gonna have to talk about some episodes on the podcast in the future, and I don't want to have to tiptoe around a bunch of bullshit because you're still stuck on season two.
We'll still have to tiptoe around season three. Because it's definitely not a show.
No, those are gonna be end of show discussions where if you ain't watching it, shut our shit off because I'm gonna go in on this motherfucker.
All right, I'll get caught up. Leaving TV news and Netflix streaming news, all that stuff. Movie side. Something that I didn't think I was gonna care about.
I was hurting.
Was missing Star Wars Galaxy Edge or the Galaxy's Edge release, and I watched some friends that live in the neighborhood with me. Again, I live about an hour and 15 minutes from Disneyland. Watching some friends of mine that actually went opening day. I'm watching them like live stream on Facebook. The Harrison Ford and everybody else coming on the stage at the Millennium Falcon there, and. Like, at this point, it's not even FOMO, right? It's like Romo, the regret of missing out. Like,
my friend actually coined that same term about he missed EDC 2 weeks again, and he said the same thing. And I said, there's a funny Dallas Cowboys Tony Romo missing the Super Bowl joke in there. I just can't fucking think of it right now. But he said the same thing. He's like, I got Romo, regret of missing out.
But yeah, it's really, I watched it and I didn't think I was going to care because it was going to release, but it's this mess of human beings that I actually hate going to the theme parks and doing that stuff. It's not even complete yet. Like, I mean, there's only one ride that's open and that's the Smuggler's Run, but the whole area that's supposed to be the Resistance and have the Resistance ride and stuff, that's not even done yet. So you can't even go be a part of it.
Bro,
so it's
like, the gift shops. The fucking gift shops.
Yeah, and, like, and not to mention, oh my God. So I've gone and watched some of the YouTube videos. What they have done is they've turned the gift shops into experiences too, where like the building, the lightsaber thing. I mean, you're going in and you're spending at least $200 to do a lightsaber. But it's a show to where it's like, you know, you build your lightsaber, they bring them all to life. There's an actual actor who's in there walking you through that process. And at least you get something more than just the lightsaber for $200. But the amount of people coming through there spending their $200 on these lightsabers is going
to
be absurd.
I'm assuming Dan invited you to that same private Facebook group. Like, and I regret joining it. Like, because every post. So it's a private Facebook group of people that have went to Galaxy's Edge that are
giving
telling
tips and
people,
tricks,
like
and
giving
to,
you tips, like hit this ride first, then go here. If you want to optimize time, make sure you do this. So people are giving people heads ups about Galaxy's Edge in this Facebook group. And I want to leave the group so bad but I can't. Like, I just, like, every time someone's posting, like, pictures of their Kyber crystal, oh, I got a black Kyber crystal, it's only 1 in 200, and, like, I want to know, but I don't want to know, like, ignorance. For me, right now, ignorance would be bliss.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I didn't know how fucking awesome this place is, because it is killing me now.
So I always knew it was going to be awesome, but this
yeah, everybody this whole, did, but yeah. but you still didn't know. You knew, but you didn't know. Now we know, and fuck me, man. Like,
yeah, but this whole, I just can't handle the people. This whole mess of, hey, you get your couple hour window, you got to get a bracelet to go with.
You get 4 hours in the park, that's it.
Yeah.
You get 4 hours.
And
then they throw you out, and in comes a new crowd.
The line to get into the cantina is 3 hours, right? To go into the cantina to go buy a $40 drink with a souvenir mug is going to take you hours to get into, or they're cutting off that line. You had to really like game plan, because if you were in certain lines, they would let you stay in that line beyond the 4 hour time window. So there's a bunch of people trying to do as much as they can for 3.5 hours. And then their last 10 minutes, they go get in line for something to stay there for extra. And it's just, I don't have the patience to learn how to navigate those things, but it really does look good. It looks so well done. And so, like, if you watch some of, like,
immersive.
The POV,
it's just so immersive.
Like, go watch some of the YouTube POV videos of guys going through, like, the line of Smuggler's Run, and what a great job they did is just, like, setting the stage inside there.
I want to say I read an article that said the 200 employees that are working the Galaxy's Edge all have individual character backstories.
Yes.
So that cash register, that lady that's wearing like some rebel outfit, some rebel outpost outfit, has her own backstory.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, Karen flipping fries in the back is actually fucking some rebel goddamn alliance.
Yeah, she. I mean, I will be make it there soon again. My family's got season passes, and we'll get there. I didn't make a reservation.
Dick.
So I actually, after watching everybody, I tried to go and see if I could still get a reservation to go this month, and you can't. Like, it's done. There's no standby lines. Reservations are closed. So the soonest
is that even a year and a half from now, when I'll probably be able to go, it's still going to be 4 hour window. It's never going to be.
I think it'll go away from that.
I mean, I'm hoping, but a part of me, it just has this feeling that at no point will Galaxy's Edge ever be like a free roam Disney park, like the adventure part or the
yeah,
main park.
I think it'll always have the risk of being like capped out. You know, there's going to be the people clicking their little buttons as everybody walks by, and they're gonna be like, oh, well, we're at our 10,000 people cap here. And
what they really need to do is buy up another motherfucking 1,000 acres and create a,
dude, I don't even know where they can find
a Marvel. No, if they made a Marvel one right next door to compete with it, you'd have a split.
Yeah. I don't know where they found the 14 acres. If you've never been to Disneyland,
well,
in the middle. It's in the middle of the city. Like, there is, you've got to go level other existing building. Which, don't get me wrong, Disney will have no problem leveling everybody.
Yeah, they will build concrete islands in the ocean if they have to.
But it's not easy for Disneyland to keep expanding. Like Disney World, they got all the space for days. I mean, it's just Florida marshlands. Nobody cares about that place. But Disneyland, it's hard.
Just
it's hard
to shoo away a bunch of gators and build another fucking park.
Just destroy some more of the environment. Who cares? it's for the sake of Marvel.
But honestly, if you made a Marvel park as immersive and as big, you would divide that nerd herd that is ushering in towards Galaxy's Edge. So if Galaxy's Edge is full, hey, cool, I'm gonna go check out Spidey and fucking the X-Men and everybody over here today, because everybody's in Star Wars. Some days people might be Marveled the fuck out, and then Galaxy's Edge will be less, you know,
I've never
populated.
Looked into it. Didn't Marvel already have featured areas over at Universal?
Yeah, but
does Universal still own those rights?
Yeah, but that was before Disney bought them. Like, so I don't know how they work.
I gotta look. I'm very curious. I might look into that now.
But they built the Guardians of the Galaxy ride at Disney World.
Yeah, they did.
They took down that what was it, the Tower ride that they had?
Tower of Terror.
they took down the Tower of Terror and built a Guardians of the Galaxy because they were just finishing that ride when we were there. So that's the last time we went. So I couldn't go on the ride, but they were finishing it up and they had all the promos and they still had a section of the park that had Spider-Man, Captain America, blah, blah, blah. But it was in that main part of the park.
They have actors
like,
and
fuck
stuff.
That. Build a Galaxy's Edge section that houses all your Marvel properties.
Maybe
especially after they bought Fox and they have the X-Men now.
Yeah.
You know, you could have a Cerebro ride. You put on a fucking helmet, a VR helmet, and you go into Cerebro. Like, am I the only fucking moron thinking this shit? Is there not a dude in a fucking boardroom right now coming up with this? Because if not, I want a job. Because I can make this fucking thing. Give me a goddamn sketchboard. Give me a plot of land. I'll draw out the whole fucking shiz, and you can make a fucking billy off that, all right? Because if there's not a dude like me in that fucking boardroom, y'all motherfuckers need me.
Right. Oh, there's your resume. Just go ahead and cut that out
someone,
and email
someone
that for, to,
someone
to
listening Dave. Forward this shit over to fucking to Eisner and all them.
Well, let's go ahead because we're pressing on, and I know this last
we're pressing
topic.
On time.
So now that we're talking Marvel,
now that we're talking Marvel,
let's go with our favorite discussion here for the week and deleted scenes coming out of this Captain Marvel movie. So you sent this to me yesterday. I actually didn't see him get released because my Captain Marvel filter's been off. I just don't care. And we had the conversations when Captain Marvel came out. I thought the movie was okay, and I wasn't. It just was an okay movie. It really was not all that well done. The humor in it wasn't good. And then there's just some more really bad humor and bad way of putting together scenes in these deleted scenes. And for those of you who haven't seen it, we've got
let me lay out a little groundwork. I'm gonna give credit to someone that follows us on Twitter that I followed back, this at that Star Wars girl with girl spelled GRL. She has a YouTube channel and a Twitter, and she had made a video about Disney releasing that deleted scene. So there's the deleted scene where there's a scene in the movie where a guy says something to her walking into the bar she was walking out of, and she steals his motorcycle and rides off. Well, Disney released the unedited version of that scene in a promo for the movie releasing next week on Blu-ray and it releasing on digital last week.
Yep.
So Disney was virtue signaling and thinking that they were going to release this scene and you know, start
yeah,
that
like they put this out because they were proud of it, right?
Yeah, they were proud of it, you know what I mean? And instead of the guy saying something to her and her shrugging it off and then taking his motorcycle and driving off, he says, "How about a smile?" And then she whoops his ass and takes his motorcycle and rides off. And Disney was just like, you know, wanted to look at our powerful girl taking down the patriarchy. And half of the people that seen that scene were all yas queen about it and everything like that. But there was a big section of feminists that were like, look, this doesn't promote feminism in a positive way. Just because a guy says, hey, how about a smile, doesn't give you the right to whoop his ass.
Bullshit. You're like, no, every dude who hits on you, kick him in the dick. Kick him clean in the dick. Hashtag feminism.
Like, you know, and that Star Wars girl made a YouTube video kind of saying that, you know, like, look, this isn't feminism. This is assault. Like, you know, is as much as you may want to punch a person.
She calls Captain Marvel the villain, like that. This furthers the fact that Captain Marvel is a villain.
Yeah. Yeah. She takes it to the extreme edge, you know, but what I couldn't get over was the amount of like hate she got for saying that this isn't okay for feminism. So the way I see it, which I mentioned before we started recording, is there's two forms of feminism. There's a form that wants to get equality. So they're pushing just for equal footing in society. And that's the type of feminism I support. I have two daughters. I want them to be equal in every aspect of the world that they possibly can be. There's another faction of feminism, which I think is the more popular faction that is more let's get even rather than let's get equal. And that's what this Captain Marvel scene preaches to, is a guy says, nice smile, or how about a smile, and you whoop his ass. Like, yeah. like that's, to me, that's not feminism. That's something else. I don't know what to call it.
But, and not to mention, the whole scene is just, all right, what I want to say is, what's the guy call himself? The Don? In there, like, he introduces himself when it says, you know, hi, people call me the Don. If there are still, because this dude wasn't like old, like if there are still people like my and your age in their 30s walking around calling ourselves the Don and talking to women like that, I apologize, all women for men. Like, like if this is still a thing that there are actually characters of these people out there, don't hate all men for this. But I find it was just like, again, Captain Marvel and a lot of the Marvel stuff with the feminism stuff is, it's so lazily written. But it's so lazily written, right? It's, you literally just took some just really cheesy, like worst case character of like 1970s style, like men. You made him in his late 20s, early 30s. And it's still doing this, you know, super chauvinistic way of hitting on a woman and stuff. I don't know how many 30-year-old dudes are doing this anymore. Like I said, if they are, please alienate them all and tell them that they should probably enlighten themselves. But I don't think it's the case. But of course, Marvel's got to play it up, and they've got to do the extremely lazy way of painting men as the villain. So that way, yeah, we can get this, you know, kick him in the dick moment, smash his hand moment for all women. I mean,
the way society's headed as a 38-year-old white male, I'm just going to hit Dr. Doom status eventually. Like, I am just the cause of everybody in the world's problems, and I'm just going to take a hot scolding iron mask and put it on my face and ride out because I can't do nothing about it. You know, and it's trendy to reinforce that now. It's trendy to like I said, just a virtue signal, like, and they release that scene, like you said, super proud of the mm-hmm. fact that they're promoting what that at that Star Wars girl said is toxic femininity. So we always talk, that's the big trend, is toxic masculinity. But the answer to toxic masculinity is not toxic femininity. You know, it's being above that. It's rising above that. It's not letting those things, you know, bother you and addressing them in a more constructive and productive way. You know, getting an assault charge because a dude asked you to smile more is not the answer to feminism. It's just going to get your ass in jail and cost you a whole bunch of money and lawyer fees. You know, so do you really feel like you won that battle after the cop has you in handcuffs and now you're screaming at this cop about, you know, he told me to smile. He told me to smile, so I fucked him up. Like, what? Don't you understand? Don't you understand?
No, because the cop... because the cop would be a man in that circumstance, and there's nothing he could say.
And there's nothing, you know, he's just like, well, shit, you know, what do I do now?
Well, same as us. We both knew going into this conversation that for anybody who loved that scene, we're just two white dudes mansplaining.
Yeah, we're the dicks.
Because we are men, we are only, to certain people, allowed to speak on things that directly relate to penis. And if it doesn't, well, then we can't mansplain our way out of it. We can't talk about it. We can't have an opinion on these things. And it's just gotten to a point where, it's conversations are shut down. Moments like that with Captain Marvel being in the movie, those are celebrated. And then again, you can't talk on the other side. Even a woman who wanted to talk about it, she still gets shut down.
She got roasted. She got roasted
because
she's been posting the YouTube comments from the YouTube video, and they're all, man, you know, see you next Tuesday, you Brie hating, you know, blah blah blah. You're what's wrong with feminism? You're like man. I feel that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it this week, is because I know it was a hot topic. I sent you the article, you know, that, and the article was praising it.
Yeah,
the article was praising Marvel for taking down the patriarchy and like let's teach our young daughters that it's okay to assault men.
Yeah, by the way, the 30-year-old in the leather jacket on the motorcycle is not the patriarchy. There are real there are real things to be addressed as far as the fair chance and equality.
Well, and I've said it before on the show, I was a bouncer in downtown Chicago for 10 years. I'll be the first person to say men in general are disgusting species. they're disgusting species. 10 years I spent standing on a dance floor, smacking away hands from grabbing girls. Like one of my biggest pet peeves is when a guy goes in to talk to a girl, it's really loud in a nightclub, and they go in to like whisper in their ear or talk in their ear so they can hear her, but then they grab the other side of their head with their hand so that the girl can't pull her head away when they're talking. And you see how uncomfortable the girl is. You see like her try to pull her head away, but he's got his hand there. I would grab a dude by the throat and throw him up against the wall when he did that shit. You know, so as yes, I am part, I'm a white cis male. You know, I am part of, you know, your enemy, I've been told by many feminists. I recognize the issues that women have to deal with. In my small way, I tried to do my part in combating that in my little space that I had some power to do so. You know, so I fully acknowledge that there are a lot of things that women have to deal with that they shouldn't have to deal with. How we handle these things, though, should be an open discussion. You know, yeah. it should be some learning involved.
Well, and the movies, like what Captain Marvel has attempted to do and trying to achieve certain moments on screen, what it doesn't do is demonstrate, like Captain Marvel, it was a character that could just be a strong female lead. And just, you don't need to cripple the patriarchy by making terrible examples of them and like physically assaulting them in a movie. What you need to do is just demonstrate the quality and the strength of good female characters.
Yeah, I think every female in Black Panther was a stronger female role than Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch is a stronger female role than Captain Marvel. Black Widow, by far. Black Widow is who women should be resting their feminist laurels on. You know, this is a woman in a team of men that is an equal, that none of the men
and she give has no her, powers. She's got really no reason to be there in the first place.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like she's the female version of Hawkeye, but even better than Hawkeye. You know, so even the man on the team that has no powers, I still think Black Widow is put above a Hawkeye. Yeah. You know, so that's the scenario I think that promotes feminism.
But that's not what we're getting, right? Even the new Batwoman show, it's just sickening how bad they just want to make me a terrible human being because I'm a dude, and I can't watch that show. And Batwoman's a good character, and Batwoman I would enjoy a show. I don't want to watch that show after the trailers they released and how hard they went at making it clearly known that they don't want men watching.
Yeah, and which blows my mind is because, you know, like I said about like Black Panther, for a long time every show and movie was kind of made for us. And I do recognize that, you know, we are the largest demographic, you know, white men between the ages of 18 and 50 are the largest demographic. So people have been shooting for our demographic forever. So movies have excluded other people for a long time, TV shows. I do recognize that. What I think was so good about Black Panther was that, you know, that movie was not made for a person like me. It was not made for a white male like me, but I didn't feel like I wasn't invited. So I equate Black Panther to like a birthday party. You know, the party's not for me. It's for the birthday person. But I was invited to have a good time with the birthday person. That's what I think what makes Black Panther such a good movie is that it was a movie not made for me, but hey, white boy, come on, come along with us, have a good time. Come on, you're invited. Come hang out. You know, and we're moving away from that. Every other instance where they've tried to make movies for the people that have been excluded and haven't had the inclusion that they deserved in the past, they're doing it in a way that doesn't bring everybody else along with it. And that's where we get into the It's not about getting equal. It's about getting even.
Well, and that even went into the press circuit of Brie Larson before the movie, even talking about how this movie wasn't made for you middle-aged white men. And stuff. It's like, you don't have to say it. We know it. Like you don't have to tell me not to come. Like, because one, this movie, it's a part of the story arc of a bunch of movies that have been made for the nerd dudes who've been propping this whole series along.
Yeah.
That has allowed you to get a movie
money
now.
And then make me the bad guy at the same time. You can't want my money and then make me feel like shit when I go.
Yeah. It's really, you know, regardless, you want to talk about toxic masculinity, femininity. I don't know if femininity is a word. I'll have to Google it.
I'm pretty sure.
Later.
I thought it was.
I'm not sure. But in the end, there is just a lot of toxicness in conversation and how people have to kind of tiptoe around
things. Well, I actually just read an article 2 days ago where Meryl Streep came out and said that exact thing, that we can't be blaming everything on toxic masculinity. She's like, I know a lot of toxic bitches out there. It's not toxic masculinity. It's toxic people. Yeah. There are just toxic people out there, and we need to address toxic people. You know, Meryl, I'd have to find the link to send you, but I know I just read an article where Meryl Streep came out, you know, because I think she's got grandsons and stuff like that. And she was like, look, you know, she's like, I know a lot of catty bitches out there, and you know, they're just as bad as the dudes that you guys try to roast. So
I'm sure it's
not about gender.
Roasting Meryl Streep, and how dare you?
Oh, for sure.
Streep, but it's, again, we're at an ugly time. I hate when it just continues to, again, pervade itself in a way that is not inclusive. Like, again, the goal of a movie with even a feminism theme, or which shouldn't be a negative context.
It's
it should
not
never
a
be a negative thing.
I love what they do at Rey in the Star Wars movies. I think Jyn Erso is one of the best characters that Disney's made in a decade. You know, like, I'm all for those roles. I'm all about it. Man, like I said, I have two daughters. I love when my daughter wears her Jyn Erso shirt. Well, I love it.
And I still want an A-Force movie, right? I'm completely good with the A-Force all-female team-up movie following the comics. But I just have no faith that they're going to do it well.
Not if it comes at the cost of, yeah.
I have no faith that they're going to do it well as just a strong movie with strong, you know, female characters. It's Marvel's gonna screw it up because they're gonna pander so hard. Like, Wonder Woman was a good DC movie. It wasn't great, but it was good. But it didn't feel, it was centered around literally a society of women warriors. No point in time did it go into the, hey, they're women warriors because men are the fucking scum of the earth.
What I do think Captain Marvel did better than Wonder Woman in the sense is that they didn't put a romance in Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Which I think is good. Is if you have a female driven movie that's supposed to be about feminism, don't tie her to another male that, you know, through romance or whatever like that. I like the fact that there was no, you know, no love story or anything in it. I think if Chris Pine and you know, Wonder Woman never would have like built a deeper relationship, a romantic relationship, and it was more of a buddy cop relationship kind of thing, I think that movie would have done a little bit better, or yeah, it would have came off a little bit better. You know, because anytime you have a female lead, she doesn't need to fall in love with somebody. It's a stupid trope that we put in every major female role. Yeah. Is that in order to validate her as a woman, she has to fall in love with a man, which is bullshit. White male just said it. White male.
I don't really know what to say here. Yes. So, all right. Well, now that we're done mansplaining this, and I'm sure we're not done, these themes will continue to come up, and we'll continue to have fun talking about
them. Roast us on the voicemail. Roast us on the comments. I'll love it. I will bask in it.
But yeah, somebody come and hey, you want to get on this phone call with us or come join us. We'll have this conversation with somebody else and tell us where we're off base. Cause it's one of those things. It is a fine line in the sense that, yeah, we're human beings, right? Regardless of white male, we're human beings who wanted to continue to have conversations about shit that's taking place in human society. Maybe it's a bit difficult for me to relate to other people's lives that I haven't had to experience. But it doesn't mean I can't watch some of this stuff and be sickened by what the way it's being portrayed at this really cheap, lazy way of making 50% of the population villains, making these cheap ploys to just have these moments to clap at assault and theft and Grand Theft Auto.
Well, and the thing with every kind of like minority cause, I guess you would say, is they want to fight the generalization. You know, so all women don't want to be generalized in a certain way. All black people don't want to be generalized in a certain way. All Asians don't want to be generalized in a certain way. But it's quite okay to generalize every white male as this disgusting pig of a piece of shit. You know what I mean? And that's perfectly okay. Like, so we can't say every you know, this person is that and every that person is this, but it's perfectly fine to say that every white male is part of the patriarchy, every white male is part of the racism problem.
This isn't a feel bad for me, middle-aged white male.
I don't expect anybody to feel bad for us.
I got it. I have a good life. But the reason why it's worth saying don't generalize these things is just because it shuts down the conversation, and it really just makes it go to an ugly, unproductive way when you do this. I don't need any special considerations. But if you really want to actually maybe get to a point where this is no longer an issue, but don't create new issues. Don't create new ways to isolate populations. Yeah. Because it's stupid for me,
a lot of it is equality should be everybody rising up to the level of so if we're at the top of the pyramid, white men are at the top of the pyramid, equality should be about us helping people uplift to our level. It shouldn't be about them pulling us down to a level that nobody wants to be at in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, so let's all try to rise above. Let's all try to rise to the top rather than, you know, no, fuck it. We'll just pull them down to here. We're going to take them down a peg. Like, no, how about we all work together to bring y'all up a peg? Like, again, it's not about getting equal. It's about getting even. And that's a very toxic and it's going to lead to very bad places for society.
All right. Well, I mean, I was hoping to finish off on some kind of uplifting way, but but fuck it. Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale. Watch that shit.
But yeah, this will wrap up our episode 13 here.
Real quick, we just wanted to mention one of our favorite new apps, which is PodCoin. So assuming that because you're listening to our podcast today, that you happen to be a podcasting nerd. And if you are, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to get paid for your time.
I'm a big fan of getting paid to do stuff that I do in my daily routine. Anyways, I sign up for all the rewards programs possible. And with PodCoin, you actually get paid to listen to podcasts. So every minute that goes by that you're listening to your podcast, you are throwing away potential money.
So go ahead, download PodCoin app on either through iTunes or through the Google Play Store. And when you sign up with the promo code NerdCantina.
One word. That'll get you 300 free coins towards your account and get you on your way to earning that first reward from either Amazon gift card, Target gift cards, all kinds of things. You could also donate your coins to your favorite charity that they offer. If you're going to be listening to a podcast anyways, you might as well get some free stuff for doing it. So download the PodCoin app, put in the code the Nerd Cantina, get your free coins, and start earning money while you listen to our show.
Appreciate the listens. We appreciate all of the support. And we love the community that's growing. If you're not a part of the engaged community on Facebook, find us at thenerdcantina.com/community. Request access. But we're having a lot of fun conversations over there. We're recording this on Monday.
Today's meme Monday, and they've been dropping some fire memes today.
Yeah, so join the conversation over there and continue to support us in any way you can. We're still in our, you know, baby stage of this podcast. So every subscriber, every download, it goes a long way towards our growth, towards establishing our audience. So thank you so much for listening. Share us with somebody else. Subscribe and review, please. And with that said, Steve, this closes out episode 13. Have a good day, nerds.
We had fun. I hope you enjoyed it.